Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, August 6th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Kim 2 fire in Garberville, now mapped at 14 acres. Reggae on the River returns as a success. And conflicting information states that Whale Gulch School can remain open. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Hill Fire south of Willow Creek remains at 7,724 acres and is now 91% contained. 177 personnel remain committed to the incident. The incident management team is transitioning out of the area, with local personnel resuming command. Current observations show moderate fire behavior, and firefighters are patrolling the area, addressing remaining heat and mopping up hot spots. Small smoke plumes from burning fuels may occasionally appear. Ground and aerial resources equipped with infrared cameras are being used to identify and address areas of concern. Heavy equipment operators and resource advisors are working together to enhance erosion control by leveling dozer berms and installing water bars or rolling dips. The Hill Fire forest closure area has been reduced to the fire's perimeter. Route 1 will remain closed south of the intersection with Friday Ridge Road. Horse Mountain has been reopened. The East Fork Campground remains closed due to flood damage until repairs are completed. The Big Rock Day Use area has partially reopened, including the main parking lot, boat launch, picnic tables, and restrooms. However, the northern portion of the airstrip will remain closed until further notice due to ongoing aviation activities. All evacuation warnings and orders have been lifted by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. In Garberville, the Kim 2 fire scorched portions of the Southern Humboldt Community Park and threatened a nearby property. The forward progress of the fire was stopped just before news time yesterday. And tonight, we checked back in with CAL FIRE for an update.
So yeah, this is Jeremy Ward, Battalion Chief with the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit Fire Prevention Bureau. So yes, I am still doing follow-up on the Kim 2 fire into the investigation of that. And just recently, we were able to get our day resources off of the fire. Now again, those fire suppression resources will be continuing to check and monitor the fire for any potential smokes that may pop up as some of those heavy fuels sometimes have a tendency to burn in places where they're not so easily recognizable, and sometimes they can pop up even days or longer later. Fortunately, there wasn't a ton of heavy vegetation in this fire. It was primarily grass, which helped with the quicker extinguishment of it. But again, just ease folks' minds a little bit and just let them know that it will be being monitored still.
On Monday, the fire was mapped at 10 acres. However, that number has slightly increased.
The last update I heard was 14.2 acres, and that was once the ground resources were actually able to send somebody around with a GPS and map the fire. Up until those points, unless we have some of our agencies sensor aircraft that can fly over and give some really accurate information, you know, a lot of these, it's just an estimation until we can get an actual measurements out there. But yeah, so currently sitting at 14.2 acres. Again, we're off the fire. There's no expectation that fire is going to grow. But again, just to remind people that, you know, it is still a busy part of the fire season. We just now sent additional resources over to the Park Fire in Butte County. So again, just reminding folks, be very cautious with any outdoor activities. Take any precautions that you can to try and prevent additional ignitions.
Yesterday, it was speculated that the fire may have originated from the road. Battalion Chief Ward is also a fire investigator, so we asked if there have been any updates on the fire's cause.
We're following up on some leads. We don't, because of the nature of these investigations and, you know, and us not knowing until we get all the information, we don't normally release a lot of information as far as the cause. So I can just tell you that we are still doing some follow-up, and we've gotten some other witness statements that we're trying to follow up on as well.
Individuals who may have been at the community park around 3 p.m. yesterday, August 5th, with additional information, can contact the Humboldt Del Norte unit of CAL FIRE at 707-725-4413. This past weekend, Reggae on the River returned, and its organizers say it was a success. KMUD's Nerali Devaney reports.
August 2nd through the 4th, the Mateel Community Center and Hot Milk Entertainment threw the annual Reggae on the River Festival at the County Line Ranch in Piercy. The first Reggae on the River was held in 1984 as a fundraiser for the Mateel Community Center after the community hall was burned down. It continued on through many iterations until 2019. With Reggae on the River back, this year's slogan was "The Legacy Continues," celebrating the return of the festival in the hands of local producers. We spoke with Humboldt Hot Air Reggae DJ Mary Jane, who was covering the event and told us about her first time reggae experience.
I think these are the vibes intended. Like, it's giving original vibes, peace and love, nothing but happiness. Like, it's hard to be mad here. It's very Irie. We've all been trying to define what Irie means to us, and I think this festival is it.
KMUD's Lauren Schmidt also caught up with Nick Riley, the media and marketing director for the Mateel and Reggae on the River, to ask how it went and what we can expect for future festivals.
My name is Nick Riley, and I am the media and marketing director for the Mateel and Reggae on the River. And then I also helped run the box office ticketing and admissions for the Mateel this year.
I think everyone wants to know, how did it go?
It went beyond expectations, to be honest. It was such a good vibe all the way around all weekend. We had way more people attending than we initially expected. We were just hoping that the community would come out and support it. And, you know, it was what they were looking and asking for. And they really blew us away. Yeah, walking around the bowl on Sunday night, it was a lot of people having a lot of fun. That's all I keep saying. That's what it's all about.
Was it successful enough that it will return again?
A couple things on that I will say, just take this moment. So, you know, we did take on a partner coming back this year, Hot Milk Entertainment. And I hope a lot of people by now have, you know, learned who they are. But if not, it's run by Leo, who is a member of Gorilla Takeover, a longtime sound system in the area, who has personally been involved with Reggae on the River since basically he was born at this point. You know, just a long time devotee who really just wanted to see it come back. And so there's no corporate involvement at all. I can say that personally, I've been part of the team to kind of spearhead bringing us into the future and learning how to try to make a sustainable event like this happen in Southern Humboldt. Sorry, I'm losing my voice a little here, long weekend. But a lot of things that you see that are kind of new and upgrade and might look like, you know, oh, is someone else involved that shouldn't be? Just rest assured, it's just us kind of upgrading into the new world and trying to meet people where they're at and make this as accessible for the old timers who want to do it the old way as we can for, you know, the young kids trying to make this their new destination. And so for the second part of it, I can say that it was overwhelmingly a success. You know, lots of things to work out being the first year back, especially at a new venue, at least for Reggae on the River. But we have definitely, the conversation about next year is already happening. I'll put it that way. It is beyond success for us. We couldn't have hoped for more. And, you know, as much as we do want to improve and will in the future and hopefully, you know, bring this back to the even larger status that it was. But yeah, beyond expectations this year, both financially and as far as attendance goes. So really, it's all a big thank you to the community for supporting us. You know, I think everyone realized that it was kind of taking a chance here. But really, we just wanted to give the people what they wanted, you know, and I felt like the community really needed this, along with everyone else here. I can't officially say it, but I would say keep an ear out for 2025 for sure.
KMUD also asked our social media followers what they thought of the festival, and reviews were overwhelmingly positive. Quote, "The highlight of my weekend was Saturday night at the River Stage when Leo's production of The Sound Clash was by far the coolest live performance I've ever seen in a long time and was such a breath of fresh air for my search for new musical experiences. It was raw and gritty with a hint of like a boxing match or MC battle. I was with my best boy, jumping up and down with my people. I was home. Another commenter said, music was killer. I love talking with everyone. I met so many awesome people and swapped some very cool stories. Felt Irie vibes throughout the grounds day and night. It was my first Reggae on the River, and it's probably one of my favorite festivals I've ever been to. Some memorable performers from this year's lineup included Pressure Bus Pipe, Conscience, Sister Nancy, Capleton, Lila Ike, Lutton Faya, Jay Boog, Natalie Rise, and so many more. It was a beautiful sunny weekend on the river. Anthony B. was also back at the festival and shouted out founder of the festival, Carol Bruno.
Yes, my people, I was told I got to take some rest, but I say I could never miss Reggae on the River. I remember the queen. He's like a mother to me. Her name is Carol Bruno. Yes, she was a mother to me. So we want to raise your hands like this for the queen in her memory. Give it up for Mama Carol Bruno. Yes, I was in the hospital a few days ago on my bed. And I say, if it's one thing I got to do, I got to be here at Reggae on the River. So I know tonight I can't rail up and kick up like I want to. Yeah, I was in Jamaica a few days ago for Reggae Sunfest. Yeah, I was drinking some fish tea and a bone went down inside of my belly. Bore my tripe. So I had to go to the doctor and have a surgery. And they say, when you're gonna do what you do tonight, take your time. So I can't rail and kick like I want to. But I could never miss Reggae on the River. No, my people. So, this is my state. But I'm here for you. Yes, I'm here because I love you so much. So this is why I'm here. My doctor said take your time. But I'm here to sing my heart out. Because I love you very much. I could never let you down, my people. So give it up for Reggae on the River. Holy music can free my soul, my soul.
The live broadcast, which includes performances and interviews, is still available for 2 weeks on the KMUD archive at kmud.org. For KMUD News, this is Naralee Devaney.
So let the music take.
At a special meeting of the Leggett Valley Unified School District Board, supporters of the Whale Gulch School Education Association presented information that contradicts findings by the superintendent, who has recently taken a leave of absence. KMUD's Lisa Music reports.
The Leggett Valley Unified School District Board met on the morning of August 1st to discuss and vote on a resolution regarding Whale Gulch School. The district's northernmost school in the Mendocino County-based district faces closure following the district's superintendent's interpretation of an education code that she believes leaves the district open to liability. The issues arose when it became time for the district to renew its lease with the Whale Gulch School Education Association, WGSEA, a nonprofit corporation that rents the Whale Gulch school site from private owners. Sierra LaHara, LVUSD superintendent, became concerned that the sublease property did not have the proper DSA certification and could jeopardize the district's insurance coverage of the remote site. Others have said that LaHara has misinterpreted the ED code, falsely telling the insurance company that the school site was out of compliance and essentially opening Pandora's box that has led the district's insurance to be wary of insuring the school, its board fearful of personal liability, and the future of Whale Gulch School and its students' education hanging in the balance. At the August 1st special board meeting, where Superintendent LaHara was not in attendance, Board Chair Jessica Romer summarized the resolution, apparently in favor of the document put before the LVUSD board.
The proposed resolution directs the superintendent to find ways to continue the World Goals program and bring plans and cost estimates to the board by August 13, 2024, with all haste so that the school can open on August 19, 2024.
The association had three speakers present during open comment to weigh in on the perceived compliance issues. Praj White, a civil engineer and former Will Gulch School student, spoke about the DSA, Division of State Architect, government entity that provides design and construction oversight for K-12 schools, community colleges, and various other state-owned and leased facilities.
DSA is not in a position to enforce anything, and that this is truly a local issue. And when asked, they say, well, it's really the board here. And we asked Sierra who needed to get support and how we could resolve this. And they really pointed directly to you guys as the board and the decision makers. Wanted to touch on DSA's primary role is that they help administer public funds for publicly constructed projects. And the process is really detailed to fall to a very high standard of assurance that things were built correctly. So to get certified under DSA, first, we're not even sure that that's applicable in this case because it is a rural school, it is privately owned, and it has been in operation for a long time and really won't happen in a very quick time frame. If the funding was in place, it'd probably take at least 2 years to make that happen.
White discussed additional options to seeking the lengthy and cost-prohibitive DSA certification, including modular buildings and contracting a structural engineer for the state's program to work with existing public buildings on becoming compliant. The association then had lawyer Sarah Goldman speak to the board addressing the school's legal standing.
My name is Sarah Goldman. I'm a partner at Young Minion Corp. Our firm primarily represents charter schools, but we also represent school districts and private schools and universities in California, and I head up our facility practice. We have recognized that DSA never permitted these facilities, but that we do have permits that were issued by the County of Mendocino, both in the original construction of the facility and the later construction of the high school portion of the site. At the time, we also have a legal opinion from County Council stating that that was acceptable, and obviously this has been happening for the last 30 years. This is not a new situation. The law that I understand is being referenced to suggest that these buildings must be DSA approved is the Field Act, which is Ed Code Section 17280, which is a law that basically says school buildings in California have to be permitted, and if you're going to construct or repair a building, it has to be done through DSA. However, there are exceptions in the statute, the Field Act statute. It's not just one piece of law. And that if a school building is leased or is owned by the district, and it is determined that those buildings meet those standards, that they can be used, and that is deemed to be compliance with the Field Act. And if you look at the way this was done, this bill was passed in 2001. The Seismic Safety Commission in 2003 did make a determination that DSA should pass those standards, and DSA since then has been updating the California Building Code related to seismic safety standards for schools. And the way to think about this is there's the Division of State Architect, which deals with school buildings. If you are building a home or a business, you go through your local jurisdiction here, the county. The actual seismic safety standards that were in effect, both when the original school building was passed and when the high school building was built, and I consulted with a school architect on this, what he said to me is those were the same standards, the seismic safety standards that were in place at the time these buildings were permitted. And thus, there is an equivalence of a school safety standard, in my perspective, here, such that additional compliance with the Field Act and DSA is not required. I don't know what your legal counsel's position will be on that. I will defer to them on what their position is, but we believe that that in itself would be sufficient for now to allow this school to continue to operate while a further and more detailed determination is made.
One of the major hurdles that the board faces is reopening the school in a few weeks with varying information on liability issues. According to those in attendance, the district's insurance has stated they will not provide coverage to the Will Gulch site due to the lack of DSA certification, though others say the district's insurance only took that stance after LaHara told them that the school site lacked proper certification, though that remains unclear.
Everything I wrote, I kept circling insurance. That's the big issue. No matter who speaks, you know, everybody said something that was great. You know, I agree with everything that was said. The insurance is what's hanging me up.
Goldman, incidentally, a former board member of the insuring entity, said,
I do believe NCSIG will allow you to continue to be insured under them. I was a member of NCSIG's board, and their whole existence is to support schools like you. And it's my belief that if you were to return and request that your school continue to be covered, that you show that it is in compliance based on what we provided today, NCSIG will easily continue to insure you.
WGSEA members said that even if the current insurance drops the district, there are other insurance companies willing to insure the site. Goldman, during her comment, stated that more than an insurance liability, the board had a responsibility to its Whale Gulch students, and the school closure could result in a larger liability.
A number of these students have IEPs, they're special education students, and the ability of the district to provide the necessary special education services to these students would be limited if they are not on campus. There is a discussion of possibly having moving students to independent study temporarily. Students cannot be required to participate in independent study by law. And so that would not be a solution if parents work during the day and cannot supervise their students in independent study. That is not an option that can solve this problem unilaterally. And then just providing an education. That is this district's obligation. These 51 students are required to be provided an education. And a failure to do so is also going to expose the district to liability. So I think there's a balancing of the liabilities here that needs to be considered, given that this school has operated safely for the last 34 years.
Perhaps most compelling of all speaking on behalf of the Whale Gulch School Education Association was the former superintendent of the Mendocino County Office of Education, stating that the issues seem to arise from new administrators that are unfamiliar with small rural districts.
My name is Michelle Hutchins. I was the county superintendent of schools up until 2022. And since then, I've been working as a rural school consultant around the state. I've worked with several county offices of education. I've advised the California Department of Education. I've even worked directly with the governor. The community brought this resolution to my attention a few days ago. And when I read through it, my first thought was, oh no, here we go again. Every time you get a new superintendent that is new to the superintendency, that doesn't have experience coming into the job, that person questions the legality of the buildings on your site. It happened to me three times while I was your county superintendent. Each one of those times, they had to be advised of the uniqueness of the Whale Gulch School. The fact that the Whale Gulch School sits on private property and is leased is what changes and makes it an exemption to the DSA process.
Hutchins took issue with the proposed resolution paragraph stating, quote, whereas the board decision not to renew the sublease was based at least in part on new information that the buildings on the previously subleased site cannot house students until they are approved by the Division of the State Architect, DSA, as safe for school use pursuant to the earthquake safety standards found in Education Code Section 17320, also known as the Field Act, end quote.
What new information? Laws have not changed. The laws that were existing last year to this year are the same. There's not new building code or new requirements for this school to go through. No one has red tagged the building. No one has caused any alarm. So first I ask, what new information? And then this statement is just wrong. The site can house students today because you have gone through the appropriate processes that were required at the time of your district. All of those processes were appropriately followed. And then I go to the second paragraph on this page, and the last statement says, well, that the board is committed to exploring all possible means to keep it as available program of the district for current and future student while explore short and long-term solutions to bring the physical buildings into compliance with applicable state law. You are in compliance with state law today.
Additionally, Hutchins stated that the DSA certification is not necessary for the sublease property and said that such had been shared by the DSA itself.
Where it says, be it further resolved in order that the board hereby finds that DSA approval certifying compliance with the requirements of the Field Act is necessary to the safe and compliant operation of Whale Gulch School. That is not a true statement. The purpose of the Department of State Architecture is not to set different code standards for schools. We don't have higher codes than regular buildings. The purpose of the state architect is to make sure schools go through the right process because they're using public funds. State architect has already determined they have no jurisdiction over your buildings. They've stated that to your superintendent. So you're under county code, which you follow. You've pulled all the right county permits. I have a letter here from Frank Zotter, which I believe is one of the attorneys that you're working with. This letter was written in 1996 by Frank. And it states in here that he has concluded that the county does have building jurisdiction, but not zoning jurisdiction over the school buildings on the affected property. And so also his view of his conclusion that the county cannot require any use permit or variance because they don't actually have the zoning jurisdiction. So your own attorney has opined differently at a different time of year.
After comments ended, Romer found her board unwilling to put forth a motion. Without a motion, Romer insisted no discussion on the topic could be had. And without a resolution, Romer said, the board would be left without any path forward. After much hesitation, a board member finally made a motion to accept the resolution for discussion purposes. A second followed shortly thereafter, opening discussions.
I would like to propose that we formulate a plea that will enable Whale Gulch School to function as is. Mm-hmm. That I feel like we could move forward, we could focus in that direction. Obviously, there is room to still look for insurance, somebody who will cover our liability. That's the main concern here. Liability of the board, superintendent, the district.
Yeah, that's students and anybody that's on the campus.
Yeah, so all of them. Yes.
So I feel like there's still room for to research these options. I feel like this current resolution paints us into a box, and that's why I don't want to support it.
Another board member stated that all movement has been towards shutting the school down versus finding solutions, echoing the sentiments of many in the community.
As would I think we've heard a lot of information today. We've been really put off again and again and again throughout this process. We have had things happen that we asked to move forward and were blocked and told that they didn't have the time to deal with the situation. All of this new stuff has come to light. I think there's a lot of information to take in one meeting, and we may not even need to close the school. We will put in one track with one lawyer's mindset this whole time, with one superintendent's vision of what needed to happen. And I don't approve of either of those things.
The rift between the district admins and the Whale Gulch community is evident, as is the division among the board themselves, with the absent Lahara bearing the brunt of people's frustration as time ticks closer to the beginning of school year with no resolution in sight.
If these permits are okay for private property, then why are we seeking to open this other box? We need to accelerate this. This side of the team has already been working all summer. No one's had a break. Well, we've had basically the district hiring lawyers and dragging their feet. That's what we've seen. Time and again, the board has asked that these committees be formed and working, and I haven't heard much of anything come of them.
Ultimately, with too much dissension for a majority and new information presented to the board, President Romer moved to table the discussion as all parties agreed to form a committee to seek resolutions before the August 19th start of the school year. A letter sent to parents and staff to the LVUSD on August 2nd stated that Superintendent Lehera was on a leave of absence. Joni Potter, retired LVUSD superintendent with 39 years of experience within the district, will serve as the interim superintendent for the district in Lehera's absence. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lisa Music.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer. And thanks to our reporters, Lisa Music and Naralee Devaney. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.